Weekend. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this version of America Tonight. My name's Kate Delaney. We're going to zig and zag all over the place, kind of like a wild pinball that just doesn't hit the little flipper and go down the hole. Now, we got a lot to cover here on this 60 Minutes, including a trip to Washington coming up two segments from now. We'll chat with Jeff Holtzman from Talk Radio News about fundraising and what the Democrats and the Republicans are on target to do. It's probably going to shatter a whole bunch of records is most likely what's going to happen with the way that they're churning out the dough right now in these fundraisers, both Romney and Obama. By the way, Romney leads Obama by 1 point in Michigan. Some new poll numbers came out, and that's what they showed, just that slim lead over the president. Romney registered the support of 46%, if you will, of the respondents to the poll, slightly ahead of the president's, which was 45. So every day we see different polls that come out, whether it's Gallup or CNN or Fox or Newsmax or whoever it is. This particular poll was from the Epic MRA poll, which is based in Lansing. They do it by telephone and whatnot, and they just conducted this survey a week or so ago. So they feel as though the results are pretty positive, pretty accurate in what you're seeing right now. All right, some other things to cover here in this hour. We're going to bounce back to Romney in a second. But besides Jeff Holtzman and the politics of the day, we're also going to check the mailbag. A ton of mail came in. A lot of people still sounding off about the unions. Remember, I asked the simple up or down question, down or up to the unions. I mean, do you think unions are vital anymore to the people who are buried in the middle class and are just trying to save, get enough to spread out across their family and have something when it's all said and done? That was part of the idea behind the unions, to make sure that the wages were fair and to get those pensions covered and to get, of course, all of the employment type benefits that you could get. The idea was you pay your dues, you're in the union, they fight for you, yada, yada, yada. But now things have changed and there's a real change in the winds, I think, across the U.S. And maybe Wisconsin is just the tip of the iceberg. There is now some conversation about some other states, some other governors pursuing a similar pattern because of the fact that they are deficit-ridden. They've got too much debt, like California with $16 billion, but, of course, they're not going to go in that direction. They are trying to lop off some of the pensions because they can't afford to pay it. But they're not going to go all the way down the same road that Scott Walker did as the governor of Wisconsin and then weathered that recall movement earlier in the week, the final vote on Tuesday that has him still in play in that state. And as I said, the winds of change all coming out now from the Midwest. Other big story is the ex-NFL players that are suing over head injuries. Now, this started as conversation on some news mag shows, like 60 Minutes, like HBO's Real Sports, and now it's become much more serious. 2,000 former players, in fact, are part of this lawsuit that was filed on Thursday, alleging that the league deliberately tried to conceal from players, tried to, you know, cover this up fraudulently, the risk of brain injury when you're on the field in professional football. Now, I said this to an ex-player today who will remain nameless because he's kind of a little bit famous, and he said, yeah, right. We know, and he took the opposite tact. He said, you know when you play football, what's in store for you? You know that it's like getting hit by a freight train every single time you're on the field, whether it's something like turf toe, whether it's something much more serious than that, or whether it's concussions. You know that there's always the chance that you could come off the field even more wrecked than the last time before. But I don't know that that's a shared point of view, because especially in the past of pushing players back onto the field, getting them out there, even if they had a concussion, getting them cleared as fast as possible, I think that this lawsuit has some merit. And I also believe that they're going to look at things like Junior Seau and, you know, what's happened, the suicides of some former players like him in the beginning of May, if you remember. And I think this will be part of the evidence that he's not the only player who committed suicide, and they think it's because partially of this brain injury, that there are others as well. And they say that they weren't told about the brain injuries, and that only in recent years have they even discussed this in the NFL. Boy, the game of football could really change depending on what happens as this suit progresses a little bit further, for sure. Let's dive into Romney, though, at the top. Here's Mitt Romney with his simple push to the people. He needs you when you go to the polls in November. So here's what he had to say as he was stumping for votes.
I need your vote. I need your help. I need to win Missouri. We're going to win this and keep America the hope of the earth. Thanks, you guys.
All right, so I said that Romney is in the lead in the one poll in Michigan. You heard the crowd there, and, of course, it was the pro-Republican crowd, and naturally they were loud, and that's what you would expect in that situation. But in talking to some lead Democrats today who are part of the brigade to welcome people to the convention in September, they say they're concerned about some of what they've seen in the last couple of weeks as far as Romney's quest to unseat Obama at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. In other words, reading between the lines, they're not saying that he's a shoo-in anymore, that just because he's the incumbent, don't necessarily think that this is going to be an easy thing for Obama. Money-wise, Romney's May was $77 million. That's what he raised. $77 million. So he did better than Barack Obama did in the month of May, for whatever that's worth, because it is about following the money when it comes to campaigning, since you have to have the money for all those ads that are so vital. I mean, that is your lifeline when you're running for any office. Obama's campaign said they raised $60 million in May as compared to what Romney raised. So his number's much, much higher. The Obama campaign didn't disclose their cash on hand because that's a little bit different, but they ended April with $115 million. Romney's people with the cash side of it said they had $107 million in the bank. Can you imagine? And this is tiny cash compared to ultimately what it'll be. So when it leaked out that Obama needed a war chest of $1 billion, boy, that wasn't too far from the truth. Can you imagine if Romney has even more than that? What is the electoral map going to look like? What are the swing states going to look like? And boy, is this race really, really tightening. Stay with us. We're tossing it to the other side. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America. And he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier. And I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
gold isn't for you? Ted Anderson, president of Midas Resources, one of the world's premier gold and precious metal investing firms.
I get it.
You wouldn't buy gold if you believed that the government is doing a great job, that the Fed will stop handing out trillions of dollars like bailout candy, that Social Security would be there for you. That's not what's happening. You might even pass on gold if the stimulus package wouldn't fuel inflation, or that the dollar wouldn't lose value, or that your retirement would be secure. If all looks rosy to you, then now is not the time to buy gold. For the realists, there have never been more sobering reasons to diversify with gold. Since 2001, the U.S. dollar index has tanked 30%, while gold has risen 300%. Right now, savvy investors are adding gold to their portfolios. You should, too. Find out what they know. Call us, and I'll send you 10 reasons why gold will do very well, free. 800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Can Heart and Body Extract help with other ailments besides heart conditions, high blood pressure, clogged arteries, or unbalanced cholesterol? It did for Karen.
I've been using Heart and Body Extract for approximately 2 weeks. I've had an earwax buildup problem for many years, with over-the-counter stuff not working at all. I had very poor hearing due to this earwax buildup. Well, after 2 weeks of taking Heart and Body Extract, my earwax buildup almost completely cleared up. Could this be the effect of better body circulation?
Heart and Body Extract is an effective 100% organic nutritional supplement specially formulated to allow your body to heal itself.
My hearing is almost completely back to normal. I'm amazed.
Order by calling 866-295-5305 or online at hbextract.com. That's 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
Mailbag. There's been a big discussion on kids using Facebook, and Cleve says, Kate, no way, no how would I let my youngins go on the book with face in front of it, because they don't need to be dipping into social media at this point. It's nice to keep them innocent for a while. By the way, my kids are 7 and 9. I think what they're talking about with Facebook, and what, thanks, Cleve, by the way, for the letter, and we'll have more emails coming up at the tail end of the hour, but part of the buzz over Facebook is why, you know, kids hear that, and half the time they have cell phones or eye touches or whatever, and they want to get on Facebook. So Facebook is talking about letting kids that are 13, it would be the age, have their own Facebook page. I kind of agree with Cleve. Why dip into this whole nonsense now? And then, especially with preteens and the kind of nonsense, what are they going to post, a bunch of pictures? And, I mean, you know, isn't that still kind of the cootie stage where the boys are on one side of the wall and the girls are on the other side? I don't know. Because I always hung out with the boys, so that wasn't a problem. I like had all these big brothers, so I probably can't relate to what Cleve is saying. Although, certainly we didn't have Facebook and all the things that could ensnare, I hate to think negatively, kids and put them in bad situations where that innocence does get corrupted because of fake people that jump on Facebook and all the other nonsense that goes on. So I say forget it and wait till they're older. That makes much more sense to me. All right, I want to zig in a different direction because so much happened heading into the weekend. And one of the things that I noticed during the day, that the chatter has really become so much louder on this, is what's happening in Syria. And UN Syrian observers are saying that they're being targeted by drones and bullets in that country, that they're worried about getting blown to bits themselves. So we're talking about unarmed UN folks who, you know, wear the blue helmets, peacekeepers, that kind of thing, and are walking around, are monitoring what's going on. Now that they've had all this massive killing, I think that looking at what the Security Council's role, I guess, in all of this is, I mean, they're being shot at and they're trying to be in these, you know, villages and these farming areas and whatnot. They've got activists that are parading around them. Well, that can't happen. I mean, this is like massive chaos and beyond. When you have women and children that are just shot in cold blood, lined up in front of their family and have their heads chopped off, sorry to be so graphic, and shot and everything else, I mean, give me a break. They're burning down their houses. What do you think's going to happen? They don't care if somebody comes in and they're a UN observer. They don't care whatsoever. So the answer is you can't put those observers there. How many were injured? Specifics of the whole shooting thing, who knows, because it was pretty vague, some of the stuff that was released. Drones have been monitoring what's going on with the observers, and they saw heavy shelling and that kind of stuff. And there was a convoy that was on one of those missions, and the convoy was just pelted, I guess, all around them. And they're getting shot at almost every single day in Syria. And the idea is to get the observers away from there, of course. The government doesn't want to see them in those areas. They don't want to let them know what's going on. If the Syrian, you know, if these observers are approaching these, and they're in these Syrian convoys, they're in their own convoys, and then they see these military convoys coming to the villages, and they just ignore what's happening, and they try to assault them, I mean, it's pretty clear they can't be there. They can't be there. The Hulu massacre certainly made everyone flip out and become outraged with what they heard about and what they saw, frankly, because you saw just people lined up, wrapped in sheets, laying across the village. But at this point, nobody's brokering any deal with Bashar Assad. Nobody's been able to do that. He says they weren't responsible for the one village. I mean, it's a pretty grim assessment of what's happening here. And, you know, let's cut the crap. Assad is responsible for this. And do you arm the people who would go after Assad when you don't know much about those people either? There is no peace plan that's going to happen here. Kofi Annan said that he was going to broker a peace deal. But he says it fell apart because of the Syrian government, and then said that, you know, the UN Security Council, everything's divided, and there's too much obstructing what's going to happen to put an end to the conflict. There's no way to do it. And so Annan is saying, hey, the time has come. This is push come to shove time, and we got to do something. We have to do something here. We have to come up with a clearer course for a peaceful transition if we're going to help the government and opposition, as well as the Syrians, to resolve this. I mean, are you kidding me? You're going to help the government? Let's look at this. This is what you call a massive conundrum. Oh, wait, we're going to broker peace here. Sure, we're going to do that, even though they're shooting at the UN people. We're going to look for a peaceful transition by helping the government and the opposition and the Syrian people all at the same time. What is he living in? A storybook land somewhere? Are you kidding? Anybody can read the reports. You could go right now on the internet and read some of the reports. Give me a break. And then we have our Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, condemning the Syrian government, saying that, you know, Assad has doubled down on his brutality and duplicity, and Syria cannot be peaceful, stable, or democratic until he goes. No kidding. Is there no way to assassinate this fool Why can't they take out these people when they've gone over the edge, when they've gone completely batty? There's nobody in the world that can take this guy out. Come on. There's killers. There's hired assassins. You can't get close to them. I mean, this is shades of all the things we keep seeing. It's like Muammar Gaddafi, all the stuff that happened in Libya. Then finally, he shows up in a drain. I mean, somehow they get to him finally. They can't get to Assad. And it's just more and more and more and violence. I mean, that country is more than unraveling at this point. They're talking about civil war. Pretty much they're almost in the middle of that. This has gone on for 16 months. And people keep talking about human rights and the human rights that are being trampled on and how awful this is. And, oh, the UN, and we've got these observers, but they're getting shot at. And this is where the rubber meets the road. It's time to shellack this guy and get out of there. Or do nothing. Stand by and say, we can't do anything. We don't have any more money to invest in the sands in the Middle East, sad as it is. And sorry, Syrian people, but you don't have the coveted oil. Because you don't have the oil that we want, and others want, that just makes you not quite as valuable. Not quite as valuable as others that we've thrown a lifeline to. And then the Syrian government, I mean, how? We haven't had anything with journalists. They just try to keep tight restrictions on journalists. So any eyewitness accounts, all that kind of stuff, trying to verify it is pretty tough for anyone who's crawling around and trying to get as much information as they can from the people, because it gets, you know, they don't want that out as much to the Western world. So what's the international community's response supposed to be? I mean, it's brutal. It's sickening, the attack on these people. I mean, you look, he does not have a legitimate government at this point anyway. So somebody has to make the move. Isn't there somebody that can pick up the phone and call the right kind of assassin? I don't know. Does that only happen in the movies? Am I naive about that? Hey, coming up on the flip side, we're going to D.C. next to talk to Jeff Holtzman.
Introducing a diabetes breakthrough, an easy, natural, organic way to bring relief to diabetics. Introducing MDS Forte, a concentrated super strength extract formulated for those who are looking for relief. What can MDS Forte do for you? MDS Forte reduces glucose levels safely and effectively, reduces cholesterol and triglyceride levels, increases HDL or good cholesterol while reducing LDL or bad cholesterol. MDS Forte reduces A1C, improves eyesight and circulation to the limbs, and helps with weight loss. Is non-toxic, caffeine-free, 100% natural, 100% organic, and comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Waiting for the side effects disclaimers? With MDS Forte, there are none. Order a 25-day treatment of MDS Forte by calling 213-405-5355, 213-405-5355, or visit bestbloodsupport.com. That's bestbloodsupport.com for MDS Forte, a diabetes breakthrough.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include microplant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock, save you money, and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today. HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you have the amazing LifeStraw from MyPatriotSupply.com. LifeStraw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. LifeStraw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. LifeStraw is easy to clean, comes with a one-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing LifeStraw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Sea Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tatler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com. For emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
There are so many benefits you can get from taking unheated whey protein. It helps put out the fire of inflammation and the pain it is causing. Eliminate the craving for carbohydrates, better sense of well-being, weight loss, muscle strength, energy, and growth, and optimal glutathione production. Glutathione is the number one means by which you detoxify all toxins, and this is vital to you feeling and looking good again. Consuming One World Whey is the most powerful way to raise glutathione. People report the elimination of pain and bloating after 1 month, as well as an improvement in strength, energy, and blood sugar. Children love the flavor and prefer it over junk food. One World Whey is performing mighty miracles for young and old. It is superior, unique, and unprecedented from any other whey protein powder on the market. Call 888-988-3325. Mention coupon code KNOCKOUT and you'll receive a free tube of KNOCKOUT pain cream with your order, which eliminates soft tissue pain in 10 minutes for 90% of users. Call 888-988-3325 or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.
Each and every show, we go inside the Beltway with the true insiders from Talk Radio News to tee it up. Crazy day in D.C. because a lot was happening, or it seems as though a lot was happening anyway. Jeff Holtzman from TRN joins us now. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Hey, Kate, I'm great. Good to be back with you.
The White House is saying no thanks. They reject the whole idea of special counsel for national security leaks. This was a big deal, obviously. And Republican, Democrat, a lot of people in the Senate were talking about it and throwing in their two cents. And, of course, everyone's saying you have to stop the leaks. I mean, this isn't an issue along party lines because everybody agrees on that. So what's the deal with the White House saying forget it?
Well, Kate, the White House doesn't really want to make this an issue, and I think the reason is because they know that somebody somewhere in the administration or one of the intelligence agencies, be it the FBI or, you know, the CIA or something like that, leaked the story about the Obama administration waging a cyber attack against Iran, against its computer systems that are involved in its nuclear program. And they leaked the story to the New York Times, and the New York Times ran with it. Now, of course, the immediate reaction from a lot of critics was the White House or the administration leaked this for political reasons, for political motivation, to make President Obama look good and to make him look like he's doing a great job on foreign policy and particularly being strong against Iran. Now, the White House has refuted that notion. The New York Times also printed as such and said that there was no attempt by the White House to purposely place this in their front pages. But nonetheless, the theory that that's a possibility continues to go on. And today it was suggested by members of Congress that there should be an investigation. There should be a special counsel from outside the administration hired to investigate this. The White House said no thanks. Jay Carney, the president's spokesperson, told reporters today that that's not something that they're interested in. He said that the administration is confident that they'll be able to, you know, find out who leaked it and why it was leaked, but they don't need an outside counsel to do so. Now, it's interesting because Republicans and Democrats on the Hill got together, and there's this sort of bipartisan effort right now to insert legislation into the House and Senate intelligence authorization bills that would really crack down on leaks and prevent them from happening in the future. Dianne Feinstein, who is the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Mike Rogers, who is the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, say they're both working on it. Of course, the House passed its intelligence authorization bill for next year. They passed that last month, but Rogers says that he's going to try and rework the bill so that when it goes to conference with the Senate bill, that they can get an agreement on some language to prevent leaks going forward.
Ooh, interesting. So this is far from over. I mean, there's more conversation that's going to happen here.
Absolutely. And you know, according to Feinstein, we should know sometime in the next month. That's when the Senate hopes to have its bill completed, whether or not that language is going to make its way into the legislation. Now, obviously, there are already laws on the books that are aimed at preventing classified information from being leaked out. I mean, that's something that's just common sense. But obviously, it hasn't been working if the leaks are still going on. It's obviously still a problem.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so we switch gears. We move from that to the president on the West Coast. And you know this, that there were some on the Hill that wanted him to come back and work on some of the sticky monetary things that are happening in D.C. And, of course, he said, no, you know, this is a campaign swing. What's trickling down back in D.C.? How's that fundraising going?
Well, it's going well for the president. I mean, he's obviously raising millions of dollars, but Republicans are beating him up over the fact that he's out fundraising while the economy is in bad shape and while things need to be negotiated. And specifically, Republicans are upset at the president because he hasn't gotten back to them yet on a series of proposals that they've offered him on ways to pay for a freeze in terms of student loan interest rates. Now, if Congress doesn't act, interest rates on Stafford loans, which are federal loans that a lot of students, a lot of alumni have taken advantage of, those interest rates will double to 6.8% on July 1st. So obviously Congress needs to do something about it. Now, the Republicans in the House have proposed a series of measures to pay for it, and the price tag of freezing the rates is about $6 billion. One of the suggestions that they've given to the president is to ask federal employees to contribute more to their pension and their retirement and their benefits. I think the figure that was cited was about 1.2%, a 1.2% increase. And that's actually something that the president himself has supported as part of a broader deficit reduction strategy. But the White House has yet to get back to Republicans and let them know whether they'll agree to any of those measures. And the Republicans are ticked off about it. Now, the White House continues to be mum, saying that they're confident that Republicans and Democrats on the Hill will work out an agreement ahead of July 1st. But obviously, the war of words between the two sides goes on, and Republicans today called on the president to return home to negotiate with them. The White House sort of laughed that off. And it is sort of a laughable, picturing that would be sort of laughable. I mean, to interrupt a campaign trip to come back and sit across the table. I mean, it's clearly a political move from the Republicans on this one. But that's what you're seeing a lot of this year. It's an election year. You're seeing a lot of politics played by each side, and each side is trying to frame the other as being, you know, the boogeyman. And we'll see if it pays off for, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats.
Yeah. Syria, what's going on there? Hillary Clinton saying, you know, basically this is a despicable situation, but that's all we've heard. You know, so you have the Secretary of State saying stuff like that. Even Jay Carney and Tim Geithner, the Secretary of the Treasury, was talking about the Syrian situation a couple of days ago. But still, nothing's happening. So what's the latest?
Well, nothing's happening in the sense that the Annan peace plan is completely being ignored by the Syrian regime. And, you know, at a time when, you know, dozens and dozens and hundreds of civilians are being slaughtered, there's a lot of finger-pointing going on in Syria. The regime is saying, well, it's rebels and terrorist groups that are committing all the massacres and all the atrocities. And, of course, the opposition groups are saying it's clearly the Syrian regime. And I think that the broad consensus in the U.S. and, you know, among European allies is that it is the Syrian regime and that Bashar Assad needs to go and that he's guilty, clearly, of committing all these atrocities. And keep in mind that almost 10,000 people have been killed in the last 15 months since this popular uprising in Syria began. And what you're hearing from top-level officials in the U.S., at least, I think, is more and more sort of a willingness to embrace possible military action against Syria. Up until this point, I think the administration has been sort of loath to resort to that. I think they prefer to settle this diplomatically, but they're finding that more challenging and challenging with each passing day. Tim Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, yesterday said that he would favor some sort of Chapter 7 resolution. Chapter 7, under that, you can, you know, possibly get military force sanctioned by the United Nations. That's something that they used for the Libya resolution last year. So Geithner clearly is on board with that. I think military officials secretly, or at least not publicly, I would say, are on board with that. General Dempsey, who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, they said they have contingency plans in place, but he would not publicly embrace a military plan just yet. But Hillary Clinton, of course, made it clear today with her trip to Turkey that it's time for Assad to go, and she struck a pretty serious tone, a more assertive tone than I've heard her strike before. So it's I don't think anything's going to happen overnight. Of course,
yeah.
The U.S. still has to get Russia and China to the table at the U.N. to agree to something like that. But I think there's more willingness and more support for something like that, you know, a military physical campaign against Assad now than there was, say, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I agree with you. Eric Holder, on this show on America Tonight, Jeff, people want to see Holder go for the most part, I'd say 80% of the audience for a plethora of reasons, but especially because of Fast and Furious. He says he wants some time now to have some conversation. What's going on with that?
Well, this is an issue that obviously Republicans have not let go, and I think they're right. This was obviously a very, very misguided and screwed up program, and whoever authorized it obviously needs to be held accountable. Of course, it led to the deaths of a lot of folks, including
yes.
a couple of ATF agents. So anyway, Eric Holder is on the Hill today, and he said that, you know, he continued to defend his role. He said he did not know of the operation, and that, you know, he did not inform the White House of it. He was not, he was basically in the dark about it. But he did later say that he would agree to sit down with John Boehner and talk about it more at length. And, of course, the Republicans also want the Department of Justice to turn over more documents. They say that Holder has about 7,000 documents relating to Fast and Furious. Meanwhile, Holder suggests that the documents that he's already turned over to congressional Republicans are all that he has. So it's interesting. This story will not die anytime soon, and I'm going to be really interested to see what happens as a byproduct of this meeting between Holder and Boehner.
Yeah. What about one last thing, because we talked about fundraising, the West Coast thing, president, no, not coming back, as you mentioned, almost laughable. But what about the numbers? Romney's numbers were bigger than Obama's in May, weren't they?
Well, there's a lot of folks who would say size doesn't matter, Kate, but
yeah.
In this case, I think it's pretty telling. The Romney campaign said that they raised $77 million in the month of May. That's eye-opening. Those are eye-opening numbers, in my opinion. And that's almost 200% or 100% increase over what they raised in April when they pulled in just a little over $40 million. And though President Obama pulled in $60 million last month, it clearly put him in second place for the month. So that's pretty impressive fundraising clout shown by both sides. I think we're going to obviously see some records shattered during this campaign season, but the Romney camp has to feel pretty good with itself. And also, you have to feel good if you're a Republican about the RNC's fundraising efforts. The RNC was largely silent and sort of in a disappearing mode back in 2008 when a lot of donors bypassed them and went directly to the super PACs. But now it seems as though you have the super PACs and the RNC all firing on all cylinders. So good news for the Republicans. And for Democrats, you know, President Obama might have come in second last month, but if he continues to hold fundraising trips like the one he did in California the past couple of days where he takes in $5 or $10 million, then he'll be fine too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to see some records shattered, as you said. Big, big, big numbers in the end. By the time we get to the end of this thing, we're going to be shocked. Or we shouldn't say shocked, but we're going to see record-setting numbers without a doubt. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News. Great job. We'll talk to you again.
How's your pH today? Are you acidic? How alkaline is your blood and body? What is the pH of the water you drink? We are AlkaVision, and we have the answers. Drinking pure, high-alkaline water is one of the most important factors in maintaining vibrant health and high energy, because bacteria and viruses cannot survive in an alkaline, high pH environment. If your drinking water isn't at a pH level of 8 or higher, boost it with AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops. Our unique formula will alkalize your water, ridding your body of harmful toxins and acid, and help regain energy and health. Simply add 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops to help your body rid itself of acidic waste, increase oxygen, and raise the pH of your body to optimal levels. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops for only $29.95 at AlkaVision.com, spelled AlkaVision.com, or call 800-518-7615, 800-518-7615. Alkalize your body, supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com.
Now at DeseretFoodStore.com. Sign up for a one-month supply of delicious food for only $99 with free shipping. That's right, only $99. Gourmet restaurant-style meals with a 30-year shelf life. Packaged in heavy-duty Mylar bags for easy transport and freshness. Meals like stroganoff, lasagna, teriyaki, five-bean chili, granola pancakes, and much more. Visit DeseretFoodStore.com. Spelled D-E-S-E-R-E-T, FoodStore.com. Or call 801-444-1444. Food for now. Food for life.
37 things to hoard. Do you have the 37 crucial food items you can't survive without? When disaster hits and mobs go crazy grabbing food off the shelves, your family may be without food or waiting in long food lines. Prepare now at 123survivalplan.com. That's 123survivalplan.com. Many people don't have these 37 food items. Learn what you need to hoard now at 123survivalplan.com. Watch the video over 1 million people of you to discover the 37 food items that will sell out first when disaster strikes at 123survivalplan.com.
Are you still a traditional smoker? Now experience a new lifestyle and try vaping with e-cigarettes by LeCig. Imagine no ashes, stains, nasty smell, or coughing and hacking. With LeCig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replaceable cartridge, you'll get all the benefits and satisfaction of smoking without the hazards. Choose your taste from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquids at LeCig.com. And LeCig smokes the competition by serving thousands of worldwide customers with real people customer service, fast, free, same-day shipping, and a 30-day warranty and satisfaction guarantee. So are you ready for a new vaping lifestyle? Then call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Or visit LeCig.com, spelled L-E-C-I-G.com. LeCig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker.
As mentioned earlier in the show here on America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney, Cleve isn't the only person who had some thoughts on what's happening these days. Besides Facebook, still the reaction to unions, pro and con, in light of the recall movement that came to an end this past Tuesday. So without further ado, let's run down to the mail room and check the mail.
The mail is here.
Ooh. I never get tired of old Homer. I just actually saw his movie the other day, saw the Simpsons movie from 2007. I might have mentioned that. Thought it was kind of clever. Matt Groening has a lock on funny with the Simpsons anyway. All right, this isn't about funny. This is about serious. Thumbs up, thumbs down. I said it's pretty simple. You have to feel one way or the other because perhaps in your lifetime you've been part of a union or been asked to join a union or forced to join a union. I mentioned when I worked in New York City, you couldn't be on the air at the station where I was unless you were part of the actors union, well, not actors, broadcasters slash actors union called AFTRA, and nobody was hired unless they joined the union. In fact, this, the first thing they said to me is, well, you have to be join the union. It's not so much that management wanted that you'd be part of the union, but that you had to be on the air, because that's how it is in New York. In L.A., it's like that. In a lot of places, in Chicago, it's like that. But that's broadcasting, every industry is different. We know that a lot of the union stuff involves, for example, teachers. The teachers' unions are pretty powerful. And I think it was a massive blow to the strength of the union, what happened in Wisconsin, because of the massive amount of debt, of shortfalls that the governor had to figure out a way to get around. So he went after the union, saying, you know, we're going to cut back on some of this power, this collective bargaining power, because we can't afford it any longer, and we could save jobs that way. I mean, that was the other thing. We can save jobs, and we don't have to cut people out of these unions because we can, you know, reduce the amount that we're going to kick in for the pensions, and the same thing with health care. And boy, the unions didn't like that because they haven't had to deal with what the rest of us have had to deal with as taxpayers. Let's face it, because in that state, if you weren't in the union, you were definitely ponying up the money for the people that were in the unions. So here's a couple of responses that we got. This one was from Brian, who says, hello, America, tonight. Bravo as to what has happened in Wisconsin. They fell flat in the push to get rid of Scott Walker. It was tough for him to decide to do this, and I don't really even think it boils down to Republicans or Democrats. It's simply a matter of survival and then thriving. A state can't allow itself to do what the federal government has done and what it will do to all of us when we have seemingly no say. Well, I think he's going along those same lines that, okay, it's like talking about the taxes, cut the tax cuts, and we're going to have to pay more and all that other sort of stuff, because guess what? We have too much debt, and you're going to have to pay for it because somebody has to pay for it. He's not the only one who had some thoughts on it. This one came from us, from Vladi, who says, America Tonight, so disappointed in your point of view on the unions. I can't imagine that somebody originally from the Northeast would be anti-union. And unions were set up to protect the little people from the big, bad, nasty corporations and people who were plundering them. And that's why the unions were so necessary. And, you know, here's the thing, Vladi, I agree. In the beginning, absolutely. We, you know, you could go back to the, I said this before, New York and the garment industry and the, what was happening in that particular area. You know, we know about the Triangle Factory fire and the conditions and blah, blah, blah. And I think the unions were so, so necessary. In the auto industry, there was a time when they were very necessary. The time has come and gone. And it just doesn't work anymore. And it doesn't work because the taxpayers, number one, don't want to shoulder the burden as they're getting crucified from all different directions, and they're not in the union, and the states can't afford it. The bottom line is they can't afford the amount that they're having to put in some cases. It's draining them, and draining them means it's more of a tax burden on everybody else. So how do you solve that riddle? It is definitely a dilemma. It is a dilemma. So I disagree. Sorry I disappointed you, but I am not pro-union. I think there are some unions probably that are fine, because I can't blanketly condemn every union. They're all different. There's some that are toasty ripe with power and greed and problems at the top levels, and I'm sure there's some that are in a different situation because of what that industry is, what the, you know, what it's about. And there, and it varies from industry to industry. So I never ever want to put a blanket statement over anything, because for sure somebody could come up to me and explain their situation, and maybe it's quite different depending on where they are and what they do for a living. All right, let's take this other one. This one is from Sam I Am. I like that, Sam I Am. Sam I Am says, wow, Delaney, are you watching what's happening with Romney? I think that more people are either embracing Romney, or if anything else, they don't want the same old with Obama. Therefore, Romney is starting to raise a whole bunch of money, and a whole bunch of people are backing him up. I've heard you talk about endorsements before, and I know you've said that endorsements are good for getting money out of certain people, friends of the people who endorse the candidate. But otherwise, who cares about endorsements? And I kind of agree with that. However, clearly you need the right people to back you so you can get the money you need for the television time, the radio time, the billboards, online ads, whatever it takes. I really feel that Romney is going to overtake Obama. What do you think? Yeah, I think that in the polls, it's neck and neck, but a lot of the polls in the beginning with McCain were neck and neck with Obama, too. This comes down to the ads. I think it comes down to the ads and the spending. It comes down to what happens at the conventions. It comes down to those debates. The couple of presidential debates could make a difference, for Romney. And I suppose Obama. And, of course, the economy and things related to that and jobs will play heavily into this election without a doubt. You know, we can talk about the economy. We can hear about how, oh, we're turning a corner. We can hear about all kinds of unicorns that are going to inhabit the earth. But the bottom line is I don't really see that being the reality for most people in Main Street. I don't think that's a reality. Small businesses are hanging on, and even if they're thriving a little bit, they're still concerned they're not getting the loans and they can't hire extra people. So then there aren't jobs being created. I mean, we know this scenario. We've talked about it, it seems like, a zillion times for the past year and a half, and even before that we were talking about this. So it's he who spends the most money. And in the end, how do we look economically as it gets closer to the election? I think it's going to play a big part of this. And I do think that the Democrats are a little bit more concerned about Romney than they were originally. I mean, it's just official, and it's a whole different thing now, obviously, at this point. All right, let's check out another one. Here's one from... I love, I mean, nobody just, it's just not plain and simple. Everybody has a nickname. And this one comes to us from Little Al. Little Al used to email us a lot, so I'm quite sure it's the same Little Al. Little Al says, Kate, I don't know if you saw this or not, but there was a story that I happened to read in the USA Today about all the money that has been thrown away, all the millions of dollars of U.S. gear that's been wasted in Pakistan. Did you see that story? Yes. The U.S., they procured, I guess, 110 IED jammers for the Pakistani military. It cost $23 million in 2009. The idea was to ease the threat of the IEDs. And unfortunately, none of the jammers were used. None of the jammers. Ooh! Any thoughts? You can send them to me at americatonight.net.